I have.
Why are you been screaming at children?
I don't know. I just see a child and I'm like, get the fuck out of here!
What are you doing?
What are you doing being a child?
This is a winery. Get out.
That could be a huge problem if you had, you know, children running around and screaming and knocking shit
I really don't like children, actually. It's like animals are better.
Animals are.
We always say that about
you
animals.
You can train them. And then when they talk back, it's always the same thing. It's like, you know, like with a dog, it's rough. And with a child, I mean, they have a whole fucking vocabulary of bullshit.
They could say anything.
Yeah, and it's just...
With a dog, you can imagine what they're saying, and that makes it hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, you just invent what they're saying.
Yeah, I just started watching Broad City, and at the end of one of the episodes, they're sitting in a dog park, and it's just a close-up of two dogs, and they're having a conversation, and someone comes in and goes... What are you doing in here? You don't even have dogs. Get the hell out of the dog park.
Hey, everybody. This is Crafted for You.
You are?
I am the Bruce Shaman. I know I messed that up last time.
He called himself Jeff.
I did, which is very weird.
I'm Alyssa, as always. I have no identity crisis.
I am the voiceless Chris Nielsen.
He ate a frog before he came here.
Yeah, it's tasty.
And we have a special guest today.
I'm Eric Steinbicker. I'm just some guy.
Who likes beer.
He does love beer, and he works at a winery. Which winery do you work at?
I work at Jones Von Draal Vineyards, and I'm the assistant winemaker there.
How long have you been over there?
I've been in the industry for, I guess, 6.5-7 years, but I have been working at this winery for 5 years, and I've had this position for, I guess, almost 2 years now, something like that.
Cool.
So, it's fun.
And where is this at?
It's in Thurmond, which is literally, like, north of nowhere.
Everybody knows exactly where it is, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not in the booming metropolis, so to speak. It took me a little while to get to the Triad, so... I like it. I like it, though. I like living out in the middle of nowhere sometimes.
Yeah.
And sometimes you gotta get, you know, you got to get back into reality and, you know, honk your horn and all that stuff.
There she goes again. Yeah, sometimes it's good to get away and, you know, be it's quiet and just remote area. But then sometimes you like getting in the city and causing a ruckus.
Hustle and bustle.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely surrounded by a bunch of farms. Like, people are definitely, you know, the talk is always the weather, you know, because weather really influences our environment because... We have to farm things and make food so everyone in the city can eat and smoke their cigarettes.
Yeah.
And you brought some bottles with you today.
I did.
I brought a can.
Nothing wrong with canned beer.
We love canned beer.
Yeah, it preserves the quality. Yeah, I can.
You can open the
one on the left first, probably.
Yeah. The Saison.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So this is from Greenbench, and I have never had this beer before.
Greenbench is out of Florida. I'm not sure the town.
St. Pete. So it's outside of Tampa. So if, like, you know where Cigar City is, I think it's like pretty close to there. And Cycle Brewing.
Cool. I love a good saison.
It's very dark.
It's really dark.
We had. Dark Saison. I think it was my first Dark Saison at Mystery over the weekend. They used molasses in it.
Oh, nice.
Which is very different.
I think it might say something about the beer on the side. I know some of the other ones had. We had one beer that when we went there and we just walked over to the bottle thing and we were like, what would you buy? Like, what is reflective of, you know, your sours and stuff? And one of them was... really funny. It was a picture of a horse and a person riding the horse and another person riding the horse. And apparently the assistant brewer was supposed to be the horse. And it was also made out of horse grain. I'm not making this up. And it tasted kind of like horse food. It had a lot of continuity going on there.
Yeah, they really
followed. So there's some Brett in there?
Yeah, it was like
very
sour,
barnyard.
And it was made. Yeah, it was very barnyardy. Yeah, barnyard was
they
very
really
horse blanket.
Yeah.
And nailed the Brett character.
There you go.
Yeah.
It says it's 100% oak fermented. So there you go.
The label is cool.
I'm sure that's where they got a little bit of color too.
Yeah, I got to go to Flying Saucer this weekend. I was real bummed that we didn't hook up with you guys, like, didn't get our plans figured out soon enough.
Yeah.
Because when the con closed at 6 and you guys were trying to grab dinner, we ended up at Flying Saucer at, like, 8 o'clock. We just didn't know we were doing it yet.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we were real cool to go with you guys.
That's all right. We know. Yeah, it was a big podcasting weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff and I were at a homebrew rally. In Raleigh, the Raleigh Rally. And then we did a little brewery crawl. And unfortunately, Chris couldn't be with us because he was
Oak City Comic Con with Name Redacted and running panels. That went awesome. They were super good.
So, a lot of big things happening for both podcasts.
Yeah, lots of big things.
Yeah, but.
That's why I'm a horse. To keep with the horse theme.
We've talked about Flying Saucer in some of our other episodes. And it's one of our favorite places to go.
I love it. It's my happy place, man.
You're talking about the one in Raleigh, the one
downtown.
Yeah.
My favorite one's the one in Columbia. Have you ever been there? That one's awesome.
I think the only one I've ever been to is the one in Raleigh. And I just remember thinking, I just want to drink all the beers so I can have a saucer and just write whatever I want to on it.
Last time we were there, there was two plates being put up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It was like a green plate and a black plate. So I guess one was the first time and maybe a second or third. I don't know the color order and everything.
Yeah. I wish we got one of those instead of World of Beer in Greensboro.
Yeah.
I would go to Flying Saucer all the time if we got one here.
It's so good.
Still have never been the World of Beer.
You're not really missing out on anything. I'm sorry.
It's way overpriced.
Uh-huh.
And just crowded. Hmm. But I don't... It's just so overpriced.
And I don't think the food is that good. I don't know. And from what I've heard, this may or may not be true, but I've heard a lot of the servers really don't know a lot about beer, which is kind of disconcerting.
I got a good Flying Saucer story.
Tell us.
So to preface it, I was in the middle of a conversation with Alex Fulmer, and I was telling him that every time I got out of Flying Saucer, I end up meeting someone and befriending someone that I would have otherwise been in a screaming match with. me and a past fling had gone down there one time. We went to the Motor Co. to catch a punk show, and then after the show we went to Flying Saucer. We're sitting down, we were like rolling up cigarettes. This guy comes up and he's like, what's in those cigarettes? We're like, it's just tobacco. He's like, good, roll me up one of those. I'm like, okay. He's got like a kind of stiff suit on, you know. And so I hand him a cigarette. I was like, hey, I'm Chris. And he's like, Rotten Swanson. And he was like, I think we're going to be friends. And he was like, I'm from out of town. We're like, oh, we're from out of town too. He's like, well, what are you guys doing? Like, we just went to a punk rock show. And we were like, what are you doing? He's like, I was here for the NC State job fair. I work for Halliburton. The two weirdest.
So wait, is this the one that I was at?
Oh, you were there. You were the third person.
I was the third person because we went to...
It was Local 506, I think.
Yeah, Local 506.
Okay, I was trying to remember who the third person
was. That was me. I was like, because I know who the other person is, yes.
Yeah. So,
that was a weird night.
While I was telling Alex that story, a dude walks up, total big military guy, and he's like, cutting up with his friends. He turns around and he's like, I'm so sorry for yelling, guys. Like, no, it's fine. We yell at people all the time. We're podcasters. He's like, you're podcasters? I'm a podcaster. Like, I do a comedy podcast with these other vets that we just, like, use profanity and drink liquor and whatnot. He's like, we're the number 4 podcast on TuneIn Radio. So it was, like, the exact same situation after I was just telling Alex that happens every time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's what I like about that place, man. Everybody's just friends.
I just like, people are friendly. That's why I like going to, like, breweries and tasting rooms. I feel like you never run into someone, you know, everyone you strike a conversation with is happy to have a conversation with you.
Well, it's because it's beer people. Most beer people are pretty nice and pretty chill for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a drink that everyone can have like a common interest. I mean, previously, you know, beer was like a common person drink, and it's kind of coming like full circle again, but it's also bridging the gap with everyone and else, so... I don't know. For that reason, I think it's, you know, pretty great.
Definitely. We were talking to some cool people at the rally, for sure. We were talking to the guy who has the hop farm.
Oh, yeah, he seems pretty chill. Like, I'm super excited about that, because he works with, I know we talked about this on the last podcast, but, you know, he works with, has worked with RCC, where I went to school for a little bit, which sounds awesome. But he pretty much runs the thing by himself.
Yeah, and so then, he has this hop farm and he runs it by himself. And over the summer, he just gets parties of people who want to come and harvest hops, just come out and help him harvest.
That's great.
And like he teaches them a little bit about it. And nice. Yeah, he's like, if you want to get a group of like 10 people together, we can set that up. Just come on out. So that was pretty interesting. That's something like someone you would usually talk to.
No, that was a little bit out of, because like that's how we prefaced the conversation, because we're like, you know, we talk to breweries all the time and you know, we have homebrewers on and stuff like that, but this would be something completely different and
yeah,
interesting.
Totally the very beginning stages of the whole process.
Oh, and he also is a maltster.
Yes.
So he's got the whole beginning.
Wow. Yeah.
He's like a roaster? He's got like a malt roast?
Yeah.
Well, oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm interested in just seeing his space and seeing the his farm, field. Fields, what it would be. Yeah.
I mean, I know, like, usually, like, they would trellis them, like, 30 feet high and then run them up a string, and then when they're done, you can just cut them and then they wrap them up or something. I've seen it done a few different ways, but I know, like, that's how predominantly they do it, like, in New Zealand. And then
most of them just have, like, a machine that just goes right down and just pulls them off, pulls the hops off, and goes in the truck.
Yeah.
That's how the big boys work.
Yeah.
This one, it's a bunch of volunteers coming out and picking them by hand.
Yeah. It's not, we're not as equipped in North Carolina to grow.
Yeah, you can't grow a lot.
Yeah, I remember, I didn't attend it, but one of my friends ended up going to like this thing where they were talking about growing hops, and it was, they were definitely saying that they, like, yield lower quantities in North Carolina. I think it has a lot to do with the amount of rain that we get and the unpredictability, the massive increments that we get, and then they have a lot of vegetative growth and maybe they don't set the actual, you know, hop as much.
That's what he was saying. He's saying we don't have as much of, like, the soil doesn't get cold enough for them to totally go dormant.
Yeah.
And when they go dormant, they're able to, like, just, like, flourish when in the spring and summer.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. We just don't have those cold temperatures.
Yeah, especially during the night. We deal with, like, the same thing in, like, for growing vineyards. I mean, like, you know, out in, like, California, you know, you have these super high alcohol wines and, you know, and they have to put it through malolactic fermentation, you know, the reds and then the Chardonnays and sometimes even, like, other white wines. But then, because they're trying to get that malic concentration down. But we have such hot nights here during the summer, you know, it doesn't work like that. The malic just falls out and then the pH rises, as opposed to like in California, you know, like where they're growing, you know, sometimes in the summer nights, it'll be in the 40s, in the high 40s. So they can retain that malic concentration so it carries over. So then they have to ML inoculate. So interesting.
Yeah.
So that's something I need to learn more about. I don't know much about wine, but that's something.
Now with Jeff's new position, he's a supervisor of Total Wine now.
Ah.
So wine, he really needs to
absorb all that information.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's the difference between a $15 bottle of wine and a $100 bottle of wine, right?
$85.
Yeah, $85.
Yeah. That's what I've heard, especially from you, hearing your stories about your dad's wine cabinets.
I've had some good wine experiences, don't get me wrong, like, but, you know, when a bottle of wine I used to drink all the time, it's called Prisoner, and, you know, I remember you could get it for, like, $20 when I started drinking it.
Yeah.
And now, it's like, you go out, and, like, you see it at a restaurant, it's like, you know, sometimes $100.
It's like, crazy.
$100, 4.5 glasses of wine?
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No. I mean, I feel like you can definitely tell the difference between like a 10 bottle and a 30 or 40 bottle. But once you hit a certain point, to me at least, oh, it's hard to tell. I mean, like I said, I have a story where I accidentally drank a $300 bottle of wine and I didn't know any better. It was misplaced on the wrong shelf in my dad's wine fridge. It was on a okay to drink shelf when it shouldn't have been. And I didn't know any better. It's not like you sip it and you're like, this tastes like $300 in a glass.
You're like, oh, this is a $10 bottle of wine. Whatever.
This is fine.
This is good.
Huh.
But
I got
there it is again.
Here she is. The fierce pit bull that we have.
You need to put up some curtains so she can't see outside.
Can't see.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I know we were talking a little bit before about barrels and sour making. I was just curious, do you homebrew or have you brewed beer in the past?
So I've done like very small amounts, but like I said, not really too much. More or less started with winemaking, and then, you know, I've been around a bunch of other, like, I've had friends that have been in the industry and then, you know, decided to go into brewing. Like, one of my buddies now is a brewer at Reformation. He used to brew at Foothills, and, you know, is just kind of popping all over the place trying to figure out what he wants to do. So I've definitely been around it. I've been familiar with it, but also with, I find that if you're going to do one thing, you need to try, as far as like a profession, it's mm-hmm. good to focus on that one thing. Definitely. So it's already so much with winemaking alone, just to focus on that one thing. So if I was to integrate, I feel like it would almost be a distraction to do too much brewing. And I mean, as you guys know, like home brewing, I mean, even that in itself is, you know, it's like watering the plants and, you know, like germinating the seeds for your garden or whatever. It's something else to, you know, keep your eye out on, and if it gets away from you, then it's not what you want. So,
and we know so many of our friends who, you know, started out homebrewing and mm-hmm. you know, moved towards more professional brewing, and they don't homebrew anymore because it's like taking your work home with you.
Yeah.
You know, you work, you brew all day,
yeah.
and that takes a lot out of you because it's strenuous. Mm-hmm. So they have no need or don't feel the need to brew anymore.
She's going crazy.
That's kind of how I feel, like, where it's like, if I'm going to do like a sour, beer thing, then the way that I'm going to end up doing it is I want to do, you know, like a full barrel, like a full wine barrel, like 225 liters, you know, because, you know, like, for example, today we pumped out like, say, 70 barrels. So that's a lot of gallonage, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's 60 gallons in a barrel.
Yeah.
And it would just be, it'd be a lot to, you know, working with a little amount. When you're working with like 26,000 gallons of wine,
and then to go
like a 5 gallon thing.
Because that's what we have going, and especially just for the fact that we've had it going for a year,
mm-hmm.
and we plan on letting it go another year. And then I feel like it's going to be gone so quickly because you only get so many bottles out of 5 gallons if we were working with, like, a full barrel. Like, it makes it seem more worth it to wait.
Yeah.
We need a barrel. We need a house.
Yeah, I was just saying,
in a basement.
Yeah, if we had a basement and a couple of carboys, we could just be going, like, just have multiple batches going so we always have bottles of that particular sour on hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the dream.
Or we'll just pick up, like he said, a barrel, and we'll do it that way.
Or you could even do it in, like, a poly tote. You can get one of those for, like, $1,000. I mean, like, you know, 300 gallons. I'm just saying,
lot.
Like, once you start getting in the stainless steel, I mean, you know, stainless steel fermenters, I mean, they're
we'll get, like, one of those fermenters at Raleigh Brewing Company.
Oh, those weird... like,
I think it holds, like, 30... Yeah. No. I'm talking about, like, the small... industrial one that I point at everyone.
Yes, that would be really
I think it
cool.
holds like 50 gallons or so.
You can like just create like a little speakeasy-esque garage.
I see homebrewers all the time with those stainless steel little, either like 10 or 15 gallon little fermenters.
That would be cool.
Like a variable? Does it have like a variable top on it so you can see
So
the
it's
top?
Like a tiny little conical.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
It's got all the valves and everything, and it's just a micro version of a big one.
That's real cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Those things are expensive, though.
You're serious about your home brewing craft.
And you got some serious cash.
And the space.
And why not?
But you also have to factor in, like, the amount of money you're going to spend on beer at the store versus the amount of money you spend investing and making your own. Like, if you're that good at it, then... it could end up evening out in the end.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I know, like, a lot of my friends, that's why they got into home brewing, is because they didn't want to justify spending a lot of money on good beer. They're like, well, I can make good beer.
Yeah.
What's stopping me? So you know.
That's like kind of how
it's like going out to eat or making a good meal in the house. No. It's the same concept.
You trust yourself more than you trust some random restaurant.
Yeah.
Ordering a plate, which is true. But a lot, I hear a lot of times people compare sours to wine, or people like saying if you're into wine, it's easy to get into beer. If to get into sours, being into wine or knowing wine well, do you feel that way?
Yeah, this is what we were talking about the other night.
Yeah. Yes and no, but more yes than no. So it's interesting that you should bring that up, because one of the things that I've even thought about is that so there's obviously been like an explosion of breweries, not only just in North Carolina, but all over the United States and all over the world. It just keeps on growing. But North American beer styles are just becoming crazy. I mean, like, you know, Stone is in, going to Belgium now. Is that my, or where are
they're going in Berlin?
Okay. Started with a B. But anyway, you know, you're seeing all of these, especially all these sours that are coming around. And I do see a lot of, there are a lot of similar characteristics with wine that there are in, say, sour beers. For me, I think that you're definitely getting a lot of subtle fruit tones and, you know, interesting things in certain sour beers that you would get in certain wines. I definitely think that they're fairly complex, you know, like, I mean, when you have an IPA, I mean, for me, like, I don't get me wrong, like, I love an IPA, but there's only so much you can do with it, you know. It's, you know, like a series of maybe like 10 or less hops, and it's like either 100% or a blend of those 10 or a blend of 5 or something. And, you know, and people always seem to compare it to like one other thing. With sours, they always seem to have like these different nuances, whether it's like a spontaneous fermentation or like a potential, like an intentional secondary fermentation or whatever. And then I think that you're seeing more styles geared towards, with sours, towards where they produce it. And so for like estate wineries and vineyards, you have little nuances for your place where that wine might be a little different than it is anywhere else. So for that reason, I think that yes, they kind of work together because of they're both complex and they're both, and also you consume them slower.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you have like a session.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what you do with wine too. I mean, you know, like you have fancy stemware that you put your fancy beer in, and you know, and people do the same thing with wine. And I think that it's a great it's going to be a great transition, say in the next 10 years, where you're going to start seeing more wine drinkers and, you know, people, cause you know, I think that we're going to see that. And, and sour beer
kind
is going to
like full circle again.
I think so. Yeah. But I could be wrong.
And it's certainly how I got into beer. Uh-huh. My first beer was an Oblivion by Wicked Weed, and before that, I was drinking wine and also like
shitty
tequila.
Beer.
Yeah, but you know, like my parents are really into wine, so when I was in New Jersey, that's really what I would drink.
Uh-huh.
So when I came down here, I had a sour. I had Oblivion for the first time, and I was like, oh. I didn't know beer could taste like this.
Uh-huh.
Like, it felt more similar to what I was used to. My palate was ready with open arms.
I really tricked my girlfriend into liking beer. So when we first started dating, she did not drink beer. Like, at all. And she was like, I was like, well, what do you drink? She's like, I really like a good gin and tonic. And then if it's not that, then maybe a glass of white wine. So it started to come, like, you know, went for, like, you know, Belgian-style saisons, you know, just kind of, like, working your way back towards eventually, like, the last beer style that she ended up liking were IPAs. But it was, like, we worked back, you know what I mean? Like,
you grow the palate.
Because you were thinking, like, you were get her in with the sours and stuff, but it ended up being something that's...
Well, no, so I had to go with something that was, like, kind of floral, kind of fruity, but not, like, flavored with something. So, like a, what are the Route 225 Saisons? Like, something like that. I can't even remember.
I know what you're talking about.
Is that a soured Saison? We had that on National Saison Day,
right? We did. That's the breaded sour.
I don't think that she liked that one.
That was good.
Oh, I did.
She could totally tell me which one it was, but I seem to remember that there were certain...
I'm asleep.
I think there were certain beers that, you know, just kind of caught. So, yeah. But now she's hooked. Like, she'll be like, this bottle's being released at this place. We have to go there. Like, we went to Creature Comfort. Like, we drove 4 hours to go get, like, you know, less than a case of beer. You know, but it's fun, you know. It's a lot of fun. We had a great time.
That was one of the reasons why we wanted to go out to Raleigh this past weekend, because on our way back, we stopped at Mystery and picked up their International Women's Collaboration Brew Day beer.
The pink boots.
Yeah. It was Field and Flower. It's a lemongrass, jasmine,
it's a gosa,
white
right?
tea. It's a wit.
It's a wit, oh,
okay. actually. Okay. It's very good. It was really
super Belgian-y.
Yeah.
Everything was really subtle. They put blueberries in it. I don't know if you said that.
They also put blueberries, yes. There's a little...
You can't go wrong there.
It was balanced really well. Because at first I was like, oh.
That's a lot. That's busy.
That's a lot for one beer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they did it well. They did it really well.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that one. Yeah, we got a couple bottles of that. Or cans, sorry.
Cans. But yeah, I find myself doing that. And we were talking, I think, just yesterday... because speaking about blueberries, Wicked Weed just released a new sour.
Myrtle?
Yeah. And Jeff's like, oh, this is new. And I was like, yeah, Beer Co. got that in like 3 days ago. Like, you didn't see that on their Instagram? He's like, no, I must have missed it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, she got all hoity-toity with me.
I think Wicked Weed probably comes out between like 3 and 5 beers a month.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's
because I'm trying to think.
Packaging is so fucking expensive. They do that hot burglar now, too. They have an IPA.
Sorry.
It must have came out
2 hours ago.
Exactly. Yeah, man. Like, oh my God. It's just beer after beer. Like, I know how much packaging costs. This is not cheap.
Yeah. No.
And they're just pumping a new one out every month.
We haven't tried, but I'm a little skeptical of some of the new ones coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I have Red Angel. That was amazing.
I haven't had that.
I still have one more bottle of that. So we're going to get 2 of each of the Angels, and then at the end of the year of all the Angels we get, we're going to taste them.
That's cool. Decide
what we want to buy, if we want to buy again next year. Nice. That's a lot of money for a beer, and you got to go like to the brewery. And
yeah, they don't distribute any of the Angels out there.
No.
Except for Black Angel.
Yeah, Black Angel, but you can't get like Angel of Darkness or all those other ones.
No, there's a lot. White Angel.
White Angel was good.
White Angel. Yeah,
that
Angel. White Angel was good.
Mm-hmm. I like that one a lot. I got a super fancy glass out of that one.
Yes. But even not just the sours, even clean beers. They have a blonde now.
Yeah.
The Lunatic.
I'm always not too crazy about it, but I don't think that I like a lot of that Belgian stuff, like flavor. Like, there was one I had from Ha River that a bunch of my friends like really liked, and we ended up buying, my girlfriend bought a few bottles of it, and we ended up meeting up with some friends for a bottle share, and we were just like, hey, you like this beer? It was called Beneath the Feet of Orion.
Oh yeah, this one with like carrots and
cumin.
Yeah, I actually really like that one.
Well, we gave those bottles away. I mean, it was just like, but it had that like very Belgian-y kind of taste to it. And I don't think that I don't really care for those that much.
It was very different.
It was different.
It's very Hot River.
We usually do a flight when we go to Hot River because they usually have so much that we want to try.
Yeah.
But we picked up last time a bottle and we just opened it this weekend. It was a peach and breaded Saison. It was really good.
Yeah, the peach wasn't, like, over the top or anything. It was actually pretty... It was subtle. There was a lot of Brett character.
Hmm. I've definitely had a lot from Hall River that I really liked. So, when I got... That was the...
You don't expect to get a bad beer from... Or one that's not your taste.
Yeah, one... Yeah, that would
I don't
be
want
like,
to call it a bad beer.
That'd be like if I went to Fontaflora and I had a beer and I was just, like, really let down about it. Because I don't think I've had a beer from Fontaflora that I didn't at least enjoy. Like, I maybe have beers that I was like, well, I know what I like, and I know what I'm going to get next time. Yeah. But, you know, that'd be like having a really disappointing beer. And like I don't know a good comparison, but yeah, it was a little disappointing for me, unfortunately.
Speaking of, didn't you brought a Fontaflora bottle?
Yeah, I bought one of the...
Can we open that one now?
Yeah, absolutely. Beer is for sharing.
It's a grisette.
Mm. Yeah, so there's actually a really funny story about Fonte Flora, and I told Todd this story first. I met Todd, I was like, do you want to hear this story? The story of my first attempt trying to go to Fonte Flora, and he was just like, sure. And basically, it was my girlfriend and I, we tried to go to Fonte Flora. Long story short, I end up taking the wrong road, like the wrong highway, so it ended up taking longer. So I ended up going up like 421, like towards Boone, so then it took me even longer to get there. And basically, I got in a car accident. It wasn't a bad car accident.
Basically.
But basically, this guy cussed me out and everything. And I was like, I tried to go to Fonte Flora, but they were closed. And I was like so down about that I got in a car accident because it's a car accident. You know? No one got hurt or anything. But it's like, a car accident. I wake up and said, I'm ready for a car accident today.
You're going to a happy place and something terrible happens.
Yeah, so there was that. But anyway, we ended up going back, and it was the weekend after they released this beer and Meemaw.
Okay.
And they didn't have any Meemaw, which we really wanted to get. But we ended up walking out with, we got 6 bottles. And this was from the first batch. This is when they used to hand number all the 43 bottles.
43 of this 672.
Is, yeah.
Wow.
It's the, they don't do that anymore because they're, you know, they're just pumping out so much more beer.
Just stamping on there.
But oh, wow.
It smells really amazing. Good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're kind of talking about, like, signature smells, like, nuances from different breweries and different wineries. The same, like, with sours, I mean, Fonte Flora definitely has, like, that. That earthy, like it just tastes like the space between the farm and the table. Yeah. It's just, it's got like that dirt earthy kind of taste to it, but in a very good way.
I'm curious if they like have their own culture.
Mm. You it know says what I mean? Like yeah, like house yeast.
Yeah, so
like
I'm
they
wondering...
plated it in some. That I'm sure they plated it and have their colonies at a, you know. A certain ratio
because it's spontaneous like, ferment a little bit.
I think that maybe they originally did. I mean, I don't know. I've never
like that goes back to what you're talking about with like with sour beers and everything, like having different flavors from different regions because you know whatever's in the air is going into your beer and then you're just culturing that.
Well, when you go into the brewery, you know, like they have the windows open and everything, mm-hmm. so you know they encourage that. I'd be a little nervous, you know, with doing other non-sour beers in that environment, but I don't know.
I'm sure they're super careful with, you know, with their clean beers.
Yeah.
It's a scary thing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to get stuff contaminated. That's bad news bears.
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, Brett is something we would never really want in a winery. And some places actually inoculate wines with Brettanomyces.
Really?
Yeah, like mild amounts. And then when they get it right where they want it, they like cool down the wine because like Brett doesn't really like repopulate like in a very cool environment.
He likes it warm.
Yeah, so like we keep all of our wine stored, you know, below 50, usually around 48, you know, in like a cellar temperature.
Yeah.
It's always kind of funny, like with that even being in mind, like when I store, like, my sours, I don't store them cool because I'm like, I want them to get funky. Like, I'll leave them in the closet, you know.
I'm going to put a space heater right here. Yeah.
Not quite like that, but, you know, about 70 would be perfect for it for me, so.
Yeah, we keep ours in the closet. We keep the house probably around 70-ish.
Yeah.
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 They do their thing.
Yeah. It's cool to have to get our cellar program going a little.
I'm excited. I'm really excited about what you guys are cooking up.
Yeah, we got some good stuff planned on deck. I'm excited. I want our brown to go up next weekend. We're going to put bourbon that has been soaked with vanilla beans in the keg.
That's what I did today.
Nice.
So I chopped them up and...
Oh, nice.
Pulled all the beans out.
Make a little extract.
Yeah. And just dot the whole thing in.
Hmm. Have you guys ever thought about using, like, oak dust or, like,
remember Rob? So Rob got like a homebrew kit and Usually with the homebrew kits, you get like oak chips or oak cubes. He got oak dust.
Oh, he did.
And he was like, man, I'm not putting this in my beer. Like, you're going to get splinters or something. Like, you're just drinking it up. No. Then he ended up going and just getting chips and soaking them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we get, so at work, we get like a lot of stuff from vendors. You know, people just, even if you don't work with them, they're like, hey, you know, here's our product. So we get a lot of sample stuff. And that's one thing that we get all the time. We've never used it, but it's like, I don't know. I mean, I know of people in a professional environment that use it, but I've never heard of it used in beer. But I mean,
I just feel like there's no like surface area or anything on it. Like,
well, it's an immediate take up is what it is.
Yeah.
So, like for example, like if you do like chips, that's only like chips are only supposed to be in there for like 2 weeks, like even with wine, and then you've maximized extraction. That's what they're designed for. They're not really designed to be reused like a barrel. So they're just they're not designed that. Yeah.
It seems like the dust would kind of melt a little bit more and sort of like, just, you know, fill out the beer. I'm sorry, this is so hard to talk right now.
It would just be like instant oak character, I guess.
I think the idea is that you put it in there and you let it sit in there for a certain amount of time and then you rack it off. So like
maybe,
it settles.
Maybe you crash it.
I think like it settles, kind of like, you know, like a fining agent or whatever. It like kind of goes down to the bottom. I don't know.
I'm guessing.
I've never used it.
I wanted to know more about it, especially because, like you said, when Rob was talking about it, like he was just like open.
Well, I have oak dust that we're never going to use if you guys want.
We may have to try it.
They have all different grades where it's like low toast, high toast. You know.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, it's not bourbon barrels, but yeah.
It's something.
You still get that oaky character.
Yeah.
It's
which would be
French
good for
dust.
Like kind of sours.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure the fining agent you've been using will help pull it all to the bottom.
Well, I feel like it's just like yeast, you know, as soon as you throw it in 32 degrees, it's just gonna go right to the bottom
yeah.
And you just rack off of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as everything starts getting dense and just falls out.
Yeah, exactly. We may have to try that.
Some more experiments.
Ooh.
I like experiments. I'm excited it's getting to be Saison season for homebrewing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been waiting for us to make Saisons.
As soon as we have like constant 90 or 80 degree weather, for sure. Throw that thing outside and just let it just go crazy. Get it super dry. That's what I did last year. I let it sit outside. We had like a week where it was like 95 degrees like every day. And I just put it out of that closet out there.
Hmm.
It almost fully attenuated.
Hmm. Interesting.
It was bone dry. It was good.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's what I hear a lot of homebrewers do. They'll put like heating pads or space heaters near them and just crank the heat.
That's interesting because like with us, I mean, we'll do fermentations, but we always like regulate the temperature of it. Like, I don't think I've ever done a fermentation where I've wanted it to get over 80 because they've recommended for that particular yeast that we're using that once you get over 80, that
you're pulling out esters and
well,
anything
they
that you don't
they
want.
Claim that you're gonna kill like the yeast. Like,
that's also
that's,
true.
That's what they claim. I don't know. I mean, you could go higher. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I've had wines like I've seen where people have not regulated the temperature, and then it spikes real high, and you have a wonderful like bone dry great wine, and it ferments in like 2 days.
Yeah,
like the whole thing. It goes from like full sugar to like like 0.2%, you know, in like a couple days. I mean, I've seen it happen, but
do you guys use bricks? Is that what you use your scaling?
Uh-huh, or balling. Bricks
or
balling. Yeah. Use bricks. Bricks is shorter.
And that's pretty much the same as what's the other one? I'm blanking now. Cause there's I can't think of it.
I guess that's why. At least we know two other ways of identifying it.
Yeah.
That's not
a beer, Jeff. You can't be forgetting stuff.
I know.
That's why we keep you around.
Yeah. I sure as hell don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. Well, if you guys know the answer to that, tweet
it'll come back to me and I'll be like, oh, that's it.
Yeah, either at the very end of the episode or it's going to be like in the show notes. Or next week. That thing from last episode. It's this. That happens a lot. Just forget things.
Yeah, I'm staring.
Very delicious.
Yeah. Oh, I do like this. This is actually a really good grisette.
What kind of beers is, do we went through at least a spot of Florida, did we say?
It's a grisette.
Grisette.
Which apparently is really no different than a Saison.
At least a little more tart than a Saison.
Well, hearing this thing where apparently... So, Saisons were for farmers. I don't know. This could be a total lie. One of my friends told me he drinks a lot, so I believed him at the time. So anyway, I think that farmers would drink Saisons, and then the beer, the same style beer that they would make, the same style beer, were for miners, and they were called grisettes. And then apparently that also means gray. And then apparently... They would wear, like, these women would wear gray dresses and coats into the mines. And it was considered to be, it was a drink that they would give to the farmers and the miners for the Saisons and the grisettes. And it was, like, a low alcohol.
Yeah.
So, like, they would, you know, be hydrated and they would still be working. So, I don't know. That's just, it sounded like a nice story.
It does.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, that's kind of like how they used to do... I don't know about like Saisons and stuff, but that's how. So they would brew a beer, and the first runnings would be for like for selling or for, you know, higher ups. And then after, you know, so far down, it would only be so much sugar left. So it'd be lower gravity, and that would be the field beer. So that would be for all the commoners and everything like
keep
that.
Them sober.
Yeah. So just something to get through the day, you know, like a little liquid bread and. That's what they would do.
Yeah.
So similar.
Yeah. I do think, like, low alcohol beers, I mean, I've had, like, that shopping spree from Fontaflora, I want to say it was, like, 2.3% alcohol, and it was one of the most amazing beers I've ever had in my life.
And the lawnmower beer, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is, it's so sour and puckering. And it was just, I mean...
That's like the sour bikini. It's like...
From Evil Twin.
It's like 3-something%, but it is like
one of
puckering.
The most sour beers.
Well, it's like you have had the Westbrook Gosa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing is just like salty sour, you know. Excuse me. I think it's like 4%.
Most Gosas are pretty low.
Yeah.
The Briny Melon from Anderson Valley is
I refuse
phenomenal.
To try that beer.
Are you serious, dude?
The only reason is because it's flavored with watermelon flavor.
It's oh, man,
nasty.
It's so good.
I'm sure it is.
It's like biting into, like, a watermelon that's been salted.
Yeah. I mean,
it's awesome.
I know one of my roommates, she bought a six-pack of it, and she put, like, a little note on it where it was like, please don't drink my beer. And I remember thinking, I was like, well, I'm not going to drink that beer because I don't want to drink that beer.
I like it.
Oh, I think it's...
I might try it one day. I don't know.
You definitely should.
From someone else's. Just be like, can I just try this?
I think I'll probably just be at a bottle shop and I'll see a single of it. And I'll be like, you know what? Today is that day. Because I like the blood orange. I mean, the blood orange
is very good.
It's been a while since I've revisited it, but...
We had it a couple of weeks ago. We had it at a bar,
yeah.
I think. We had a little sample.
Yeah. We did, because we had brewed our own Gosa.
Uh-huh.
And we decided to drink it side by side with Anderson Valley's and Westbrook's, which was like a cool, fun thing to see how
and
it
theirs
happened.
Was so much more tart and lighter colored than ours.
I, unfortunately, because we started late, have to get going to make it to band practice.
Oh, you're fine.
But it's been lovely. It was nice meeting you.
It was nice meeting you. I'll see you again
soon. Take it easy, everybody on the internet.
Bye, Chris.
Bye, Chris.
It's the first time I've done this on this one, I think.
So. Yeah. We're having our first early exit.
I'm also like having a hard time staying awake, so I feel like I can make it through band practice.
You can do it.
Drink lots of coffee.
I don't even know if they can hear him. His voice is so.
Chris is going to band practice.
The weekend I've had.
The Froggy Man.
The Froggy Man.
Good thing he doesn't have to sing in the band and he just plays guitar.
Yeah.
Make sure you wear your earplugs.
Yes.
Don't go deaf. We don't need you turning into Brian Johnson over here.
I'm already, yeah, this guy's got, that's real tinnitus now.
Oh, Jesus.
So, that's just life.
It's okay. It means more beer for us, too.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Bye, Chris.
See you guys
later. But yes, Goes is delicious. We had one.
Yeah, I think ours was really good. It was definitely enlightening to see ours up against more of a commercial grade.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see, because we didn't crash ours. So we put, I think we had like 10% wheat in it.
Uh-huh.
So it was still pretty hazy, and I'm sure they use finding agents and all that
mm-hmm.
fun stuff that a brewery can do.
Yeah.
But I think ours was really good. I think it held up.
I think so.
I think it could have been a little more tart.
It was
but,
the first, and it's such a weird style.
Yeah.
And especially, like, a lot of people who came over and tried it, a lot of, like, our friends who were also homebrewers were like, I never would have attempted a Goza, so.
It's actually really easy. It's harder the way you're supposed to do it, like sour kettling. I'm
mm-hmm.
sure you know how to, all that fun stuff.
I mean, I'm not, like I said, I'm not totally familiar with.
So you have to keep it. So you add lactobacillus to your
mm-hmm.
wort, and you keep it at like 100 degrees, so it's like really going crazy. That's like the prime temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Anything over like, I think 70 or 80 or so, and higher, it's just going to go crazy. And you leave it that for a couple of days, and then you boil it, so you instantly kill the lactobacillus.
Hmm.
But we just cheated and used lactic acid. So.
Yeah. Well. Whatever.
Yeah, who cares? The results were great.
Yeah, I mean, on a homebrew scale.
Yeah, like who's got the time and the I don't know, the technology and the equipment to do that.
To keep it that high.
Yeah. I have seen. I saw this guy on social media somewhere that had like the most elaborate homebrew setup. I mean, I was like, this thing has to cost like.
Was it the Electric Brewing Company?
I don't know what it was, but I mean, it did have like panels for like pumps and stuff, like at a, you know, at a commercial brewery.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, as big as an end table. And I'm like, that's a lot of money to invest into like a little system.
Yeah.
Because we follow a guy on social media and he has like, his basement is his brewery. So he has like his brewery in the back and then he's got like a little bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has, like, a little, like, theater room, and, like, everything. Like, it's
yeah, and he
crazy.
Has, like, a little, like, walk-in cooler where all the kegs are hooked up to lines on his bar. Like, he's invested a good amount of money in this whole project.
Huh.
That's serious.
I'm hoping he makes really good beer.
I hope so.
He
would make good beer. Imagine investing all that and then not making good beer.
Yeah, you know, it's the crazy thing is, like, you know, a lot of times when you're doing, like, homebrewing, you could do homebrewing for so long, and, you know, you're working with this very small amount. It'd be interesting, like, I wonder if there's been, like, homebrewers that went into a commercial atmosphere, and then, like, getting the consistency on a big batch, you know,
yeah.
Like, it falls short. I mean, because I know, I mean, especially with, you know, certain beers, like I've had certain beers where I'm like, this is not the same. Like,
yeah.
It's not just me and my mouth, like, not tasting the same thing. It's not there. You know, consistency is a big thing. Like, I mean, it happens with everything. I mean, like, with,
mm-hmm.
you know, coffee roasting. I mean, like, you know, that's something else, too, is like, you know, you get.
Making sure your product
coffee.
That you're getting in to brew your beer is also consistent.
Exactly,
also
because you're dealing with ingredients that you're getting that you're relying on someone else to ensure
exactly.
consistency.
That's the hardest thing is because, you know, your malt's not going to be exactly the same. Your hops aren't going to be exactly the same. So you're constantly like,
yeah.
I'll add a little more hops here and a little more of, you know, Munich here.
I think that's why people like, have went to using more of the hop pellets because they ensure that, you know, I guess, like, the IBU is more, like, the bitterness is more consistent, I guess.
And I think that's why a lot of people use, like, the hop shots and stuff, too. So,
yeah.
Like, that concentrated hops. So,
mm-hmm.
they're just getting that pure IBUs, and they know they're going to get that every time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But, yeah, consistency is tough,
yeah.
especially on a large scale. That's why like, even though the big guys suck, you know, Miller, AB, and all those, but they just
nail it.
They nail it every time.
Yeah, it's kind of sad when I think about it, because, I mean, like, you know, it's like, I feel like the inconsistent beer is their, like, second labels, you know, their Busch and, you know, the everything else, like, beneath that, it's like, but even that is consistent, you know,
everything.
And it's, like, consistent in everything. And I don't
they pay a lot of people, and they have some huge, like, I don't know if you've ever been to the one in Eden, the Miller plant, which is unfortunately closing, but that place is like a tiny little city. Like, it's crazy how big that place is.
I can't imagine, because we've been to Sierra Nevada, and that is huge to me. So
imagine,
I,
like, 20 of those.
That's
how big Miller is. It's
really
huge.
Is it that big?
They get trains for their grain. They have train. They have a train that comes
grain
right
train.
They have
grain
a grain
train.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how much they go through. Is
that's
they have
amazing.
Trains.
That's insane.
So they have a train come in, all the grain, and then with all the spent grain, they kick it out, and then there's another train. So. And then, like, their mill room is, like, the size of our condo. And, like, the mill is, like, the size of our spare room.
Wow.
It is massive. And, like,
it's
so they have...
I feel like I'd fall into something. Like, I just...
There's a lot of size.
I know,
you
but...
You have to wear, like, a lot of equipment.
I know, I still just feel like I would perish in a place like that. I don't know. But instead of thinking about terrible things like that, you've brought some delicious beer, and you mentioned before you've only had one of Natty Green's sours.
Yeah, I think it was the, and maybe I...
Was it the American?
I think it was the American. I want to say I've had it, but I might have not. I can't even remember. I definitely remember picking up and, like, wanting to buy it. I might have had it as share. I can't even remember.
Okay.
But I've heard good things about their sour program, which excited me because the only other beer that I'd had from Natty Greens that I really, really, really liked was, I can't remember what it was, like the Imperial Pilsner. And
okay.
It was like 7.8%.
Yeah.
But like, I love a good Pilsner.
It's like the Flintlock or something, or there's
I don't know what it is,
they
but I remember,
downtown.
I remember having it before, and I was just like, man, this is really good. And then I like went there later, and I was like, where is it? And I went and tasted like a bunch of different beers, and I was like, well, it's not that Imperial Pilsner. I was like dead set on it.
Well, this, do you want to talk about this one a little bit?
Oh, so this is their Klingstone Pearsic. So, they put, let me think of the exact number, I think it's like 200 pounds of peaches. So, they do use real peaches in this one. They literally just take the peaches, cut them up, take the pit out, shove it in the barrel, and then they let it sit for 6 months through a year, I think it is.
Wow, that's really good. I like that.
This
yeah,
one just won, too, at Hickory Hops.
They won a lot. I'd have to look it
up.
I'll
look real quick. They just posted a photo on Instagram.
But yeah, this is fantastic. This one and the Creek, which is super hard to find because they literally made, I don't know, like 100, 130 bottles of it.
Really?
And that stuff just like, the day it came out was gone.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
This one won a bronze.
Bronze.
The American Sour, as well as the Hitch Post, the Lambic.
That's the Hooza.
The Hooza.
The Hooza.
The Hooza, or gold.
Have you guys had the, what is it? It's made by D9.
Oh, the,
And the Devilwood. Something?
Yeah.
I liked that beer,
it was
but
really
it
good.
Was it
one?
Was like no other sour I've
yeah,
ever had.
That's that was that tiny little bottle that Carly brought over.
Yes,
that, we all
tried. That was really good.
You know what? I don't know if you can remember what it tasted like, but I just got like a burnt match sulfury
yeah.
kind of, but like it was in a good way. Like it was like very
like in a
like,
Pilsner
kind of,
way.
I don't even know how to really describe it, but I remember my girlfriend and I we had it at we found it at Brewer's Kettle.
Okay.
And there was like a bunch of it there, and we knew that at the time, like, it was, you know, it was going to go fast and we weren't going to be able to find it. We're like, it's a sour, you know, so we can obviously hold on to it. And we were like, we were going to buy like 4 or 6 of them. And I'm like, well, they were charging a lot. It was like $5 a beer for it.
Yeah. And those are, they're smaller than this. I think they're like 12 ounce bottles.
They're 355 mil. Yeah. 12 ounce bottle. But we ended up opening one. And I remember I was just like, this is so good. I'm like, yep, we're getting more of these. Yeah.
They're still out there.
Yeah.
They haven't worked.
Don't they not use any hops in their sours?
So yeah, for, I don't know about that one in particular, but the rest of them, they don't use any hops at all, which is weird because most shoot for, like, you know, under 10 IBUs or something, just to balance everything, but they don't use no hops at all.
Well, that certainly makes things cheaper.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
them, because hops are expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, but they don't use any, and they make some really good sours.
Yeah.
Bill's doing a good job up there.
Yeah, one of our friends recently started over there.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I like the whole, like, if that's what they're going with, their whole new, are they rebranding? Is that what they're going with?
It kind of seems that way.
I think that's a series, so that one that you
had, I would love it if that was a step like in ones. A whole branding.
Yeah.
Because, like, the beer, D9, is really good. Then I just look at, like, you know, I mean, you know, we're young and, like, we look at something and people want something that pops, you know what I mean? I mean, when you go and buy almost anything, you know, mm-hmm. one of the reasons why they put so much money into marketing is because it works, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and look at Wicked Weed. I mean, Wicked Weed can even put out a subpar beer and they have stellar marketing. I mean, it's just like...
Oh, the packaging yeah. is
the packaging
awesome.
Is yeah, it's great. Like the beautiful. Label, they've come out with a way of like I don't even know.
It's this like otherworldly
yeah,
because
like there's like a theme with everything. Because like Pernicious has this like really weird looking spider on it, and like Oblivion's got like this guy in like a cave, and there's like funky shit going on, and it's just it's like a whole nother world
that they're creating with. Between all of their beers, and the colors that they use are always like stunning.
And the other thing too that, you know, like I know, like when you go front label, back label, mm-hmm. like that's when things start to get expensive.
Yeah,
you know, and they do a good way of like remaining it all one label
mm-hmm.
and keeping it crisp in line where it like etches in and like almost nests into the other side. Same thing with like Jester King labels. Where it wraps around and it's got like a little separation, but that separation becomes part of the label. You know
that's
what I mean?
Cool.
It's
so
pretty. Yeah,
yeah.
That's the way they do it.
So you just look at it and you're like, oh, well, this is
they
nice.
Must spend a lot of money on these stickers because these are super nice.
And it makes you want to hold onto the bottle too.
Uh-huh.
We put bottles up around. They can be kind of a decoration.
My girlfriend has like, so she has like all of her beers and everything like up. Like, that she has yet to open. And then to the left of it is, like, all of the beers that, like, she opened that she really, really liked. And it's kind of funny because we're, like, we're running out of room for it. And she's like, oh, I don't know where I can put the rest of these.
Yeah, like, just the way this is cut.
The
if
way
you've
it's
ever
cut,
looked at,
yeah.
yeah.
We're holding a bottle of, an empty bottle of Puzzle Pieces by Wicked Weed.
Yeah,
which
just,
this series is hit and miss for me.
The Canvas series?
The Canvas series. There's been some that I love, and some that are like, oh, meh. The Puzzle
there was one,
is good.
What was the one? I want to say, it started with an O, and I jokingly called it Oxycontin.
Oh, Jesus.
And I think one of the reasons why I called, well, one, it tasted like... Like, we actually opened this bottle, and I, don't get me wrong, I love a lot of what Wicked Weed does, but this beer tasted like a fast food cheeseburger to me. I was like, this tastes like a fast food cheeseburger. Like, it just straight
weird.
Up does. And me and my buddies, we went out and got a Burger King cheeseburger, and a McDonald's cheeseburger, and we cut it in half. And, like, we took
a
picture.
Did you put a photo of this on your Instagram?
I did.
Because I saw it, and I thought it was hilarious.
And it was so funny because, like, some other, like, big, you know, some other, like Tim from Burial liked it. I think one of, I can't remember who all ended up liking it. But it was, like, there were some industry people that just, like, they thought it was funny, you know. Or
yeah.
It was like, ah, you know. But, dude, it straight up tasted like a cheeseburger. And,
that's
like,
so
I made this review
weird.
Where I was like, tastes like a cheeseburger right in your mouth. Like, because just before that, I was talking about how they're putting out so many beers. It's like, you, and they're expensive. You know what I mean? Which.
You're like $15 a bottle.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, this was 15, I think. Or
yeah,
like,
I think so.
But, you know, this cost $12, and it's a $7.50.
Yeah.
You know, this, the Fonta Flora was $12 for that. And they only made 672 bottles of that.
Wow.
And I don't know what capacity Wicked Weed is at. Are you familiar, you two? I really don't know. It's constantly growing.
It depends on what it is, because, like, a lot of their main staples, they have the fooders now.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they probably have, like, Oblivion and fooders, and, like, Black Angel and fooders, just so they could be constantly pumping those out. But I think for the smaller stuff, it's not a ton of barrels, but it's probably a good amount because it's distributed everywhere in North Carolina for the most part. And
Oaxacam?
There's usually a lot.
Oxacam?
Yeah, Oaxacam. Yeah, because it was like Oaxacam, Oxycontin.
So what was it? What was the style?
Oh, let me see.
Was it cheeseburger style?
I think it was like gin, what is it? Lime zest and like tequila barrel or
tequila smoke sour with grapefruit and lime zest,
and you got cheeseburger.
Dude, they blended like 200 McDonald's cheeseburgers.
Some guy was a little rushed. And, oh shit! There goes my burger. We'll blend it out. It'll be all right.
We'll just blend in 199 more burgers. I'm telling you, it tastes like a cheeseburger.
The Brett will just keep eating the cheeseburger. It'll be all right. Just devour that shit.
That is one we did not try.
We didn't pick that one up. We have another one in there that we have to try.
Yeah, one of their gin. I think it was a gin one we picked up.
Yeah.
More recent. And we also have a bottle of one of the first ones, the Succession, which they did with, was it Riesling Must from the Biltmore?
Huh.
That was actually really good.
It's one of their better beers, I think.
Huh. Yeah, I know, like, I think, well, did you ever taste the Burial Haysaw? They did one, so they do a Saison, and it's pretty good. And they also did one with the aged and Pinot Noir barrels from Biltmore Estate that they stopped using.
We did the honey one, which was really, or the Beekeeper, I think it was called.
Beekeeper's Veil, yeah.
That was awesome.
We still, I don't think I have any more. I think my girlfriend still has a few bottles of that left.
That was phenomenal.
And it was just like dry, crisp, very floral.
It was very good.
It was well done.
We always see the Haysaw, but we never pick it up.
We should pick it up next time.
But
yeah,
Burial's doing some good shit. They really are.
Yeah.
It's crazy because I went there probably like 3 years ago now, and like they were like brewing on a tiny little test batch system, and like they were just starting out, and they're
erupting
now. Now they got another location in Biltmore Village, and they got a bunch of fooders. It's awesome.
Yeah,
that's the thing about Asheville. This is blowing up,
which is good.
It's always a new brewery opening up, a new cidery.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
I really want to go check out that Zebulon.
I haven't even heard of that one.
I think that's what it's called. So, another, like, hearsay, so it may or may not be true. But apparently, so the guy who did the sour program for Green Man left and started his own place. And that's apparently what this place is.
I think I've heard of something like that.
And apparently the last beer made by him is coming out, I think, was it this weekend, the Snozberry release?
Oh.
Oh, cool.
We have to go to the new place.
Yeah, we really do.
That place
do.
Is huge.
Yeah, I haven't been there yet, but I've heard it's gigantic.
Our friend was just there.
Justin was
just there, and he says it was beautiful. He said it was awesome.
Yeah, we saw the building going up when we went there.
in August. In or August. September.
Yeah. It was massive.
Yeah. October? Something we got there like twice, like within a couple months of each other. But didn't we, and we also just had a Green Man beer. There one a Saison last week.
Oh, the Thriller.
The Thriller was
really good. That was really good.
That was another beer that I had that I didn't like.
Really? Oh, the one with the beets in it?
Yeah.
And blood orange.
Is that like, was that like a Bel, did it have a Belgian-y taste to you?
A little bit, I think.
On the, you said you did, that's not really your jam.
I think that's what it is, that I just don't like Belgians. Like, Lunatic Blonde had that. I was like, it's a Belgian. Yep, that's what it is, you know, I mean, like, I mean, you know, consistently, yeah, it's this, that, it's that style, but I don't think that I like that. Because I remember having it, because I was like, I loved, so Crank Arm did a beet saison that was pretty good, and I thought that was amazing. And then I had Beats, Rhymes, and Life, and I'm from Fonta Flora, and I was like, well, that's amazing.
That's the one they won a gold medal for.
Yeah, the American Beer something. Was it the American Beer Festival?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Colorado. Yeah, that was, I actually haven't had that one yet.
I
thought about bringing that bottle tonight.
Because they won that's a field beer. I think that's the category they won.
Yeah.
Okay. Which we're going
to
have
to get together again then and do a bottle share and crack some more beers open.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're always trying to build your cellar.
We were at an event where they were sampling some, and we had a couple of their other beers.
They're clean beers.
Yeah, they're clean beers, and they were delicious. They were...
Their hot beard and double hot beard is pretty good. Like their IPA and their double IPA.
Yeah, we had an IPA from them. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
Didn't we have something with like kiwi?
It was something like that. It was something weird.
Everything they do is weird, which I like because I like weird things.
Oh, they got a carrot IPA. They call it beta versus alpha versus beta carotene.
I like it.
So.
Let me say, when we go out to Asheville the first weekend of June, we're going to head out a little earlier than our group and stop at Fonta Flora.
Yeah. So. That's the place that my girlfriend and I, we'll make a trip just to go out there because it's an hour and 15 minutes away from my house.
That's not too bad for a day trip.
So it's basically, you know, pop a few more minutes on the trip it took
me to get here. Is that Morganton?
It's in Morganton, yeah. And there's a really good restaurant there called Wisteria. It's a little pricey, but it's a fun atmosphere. And they have, like, good art hanging, all that stuff.
They actually just bought a farm.
Yeah, yeah, they did.
Second location.
Yeah, and it's, like, in the middle of, like a preserve or something. Like it's basically, like, surrounded by a protected area, like, where, you know, no development can happen and all this stuff. And, that's really exciting.
Really funky beers out of there.
Yeah, I think that's where they'll probably just end up, you know,
just put their sour program
there. Yeah.
Get some weird culture out there. That'd be fun. I've always thought about that. Like, that's something that would be really cool about living out, like, in the middle of nowhere. So, like, taking wort, putting some cheesecloth over it, putting it outside overnight, and just see what happens.
Let nature do
its thing. Let nature take its course. See what I've heard of homebrewers doing that, or actually like putting it in their attic, and like I have like a fan, so it like sucks in all the stuff from outside.
That seems weirder to me than like
it seems really scary.
Yeah,
and that's hit or miss.
Spontaneous yeast, like for me, is crazy because you get like these certain flavors, like you don't know what's gonna end up happening. Like when we're going through and we're picking out like yeast, like we're picking out yeast based on like what we want out of that wine.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So we're like, ooh, grapefruit flavors, like, ooh, like, you know, lila flavors, you know, like, you know, they really sell it to you, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Marketing, you know, they market it to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you really do end up getting those through those, and they're geared towards specific varieties, just like you want certain yeast for certain beer. So, like, spontaneous fermentation sometimes are terrifying to me.
It's
like,
scary.
I think of, like,
you never know.
Creeks and Cantillons and things like that, but, you know, those seem consistent. I guess they just throw back some of what they had in the last batch, and then that takes over.
Yeah, I'm sure they've built a culture over however many years, and now they know what they like, and now they're just pitching that every time.
Yeah.
This is. Okay. It's interesting.
Is this out of your, okay.
Yeah, it's out of my wheelhouse. I just enjoy them. I don't know.
But if you want to keep up with what we're drinking, and we always are posting about the beers that we're drinking while taking photos, we do have social media, so you should follow us. It's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Untapped.
Crafted_for_you. You can message us. If you want us to try one of your favorite beers, we'll be happy to, because we love trying new beer. If you have a question for us, if you want to be a guest, let us know. We'd love to have you on. Or if you just have a question about beer in general.
Or wine now.
Or wine. We
have a wine expert now.
Hoping
something like that.
We're actually hoping to do a wine episode in the future. So we would love to have you on again if you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, I can bring, the $20 different bottles and we can bag them.
Yeah.
Cool.
We should do it sometime in the future, whether it's with beer or wine, but blind taste.
We've definitely talked about doing that with pilsners.
Blind tasting is the best. I mean, it just, and you can set it up. There's actual ways that you can set it up so the person who even sets it up doesn't know what they're tasting.
That's always
fun. That'd be good,
fun.
So everyone can participate.
Yeah, so we can, so actually, I remember I took I read like this whole thing. It was like this really long, intricate thing on the internet about creating randomized, things for tasting evaluation. There's like a science behind it.
Oh, cool.
I'm sure there's a method so everyone can try it. We'll have to look that up.
We'll look into it. We'll definitely do something like that for a future episode. But in the meantime, rate and subscribe.
Please subscribe.
We're on iTunes, Podcast Addict, or any of your...
Stitcher. However you listen to podcasts, we're on there.
Yeah, you can find us anywhere. Anything else, Jeff? Any events, cool things going on?
Not that I could think of. Just,
keep
as always, NC Beer Month, so keep drinking local. Support local.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was fun.
And,
I like beer, so we talk about beer and just kind of shoot the shit. That's always fun.
That's what we do.
We'll, put all these on Untappd so you can see how much we love them in star form.
So. they're star caps.
So cheers. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.